Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Out front next, a curfew about to go into effect as Minnesota braces for more protests after a 20-year-old black man was shot and killed by police. Police are calling the shooting an accident. The incident just a few miles from where the trial of Officer Derek Chauvin is taking place. Plus, a police officer is fired after he and another officer are accused of pointing guns and pepper spraying an Army lieutenant all over what police mistakenly thought was a missing license plate. The Attorney General of Virginia, where this all went down, is my guest tonight. And a senior Republican senator suggests President Biden is a Manchurian candidate because his tweets are, quote, conventional. Let's go out front. And good evening, I'm Erin Burnett. Out front tonight, state of emergency. Tensions running high in Minnesota after a deadly police shooting. These are live pictures right now. Protesters and police in Brooklyn Center. This is just exactly an hour, before the curfew is set to go in effect. The nearby cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul have declared states of emergency. Minnesota and the nation now struck by another incident of a black man killed by police. Here is what we know happened. The man, 20-year-old David Wright, Vigil for Wright, is underway right now. The mayor just moments ago announcing that the city manager has been fired. And today, authorities in Brooklyn Center released body cam video showing police approaching Wright after being pulled over for what they say were expired tags. At the time, Wright's mother said her son called her, saying he was being pulled over because he had air fresheners hanging from the rearview mirror. So that's different from what the police said. Then officers tried to arrest Wright because they entered his name in their system. They saw there was an outstanding warrant for his arrest. So they go to arrest him. There was a struggle. Now, you're going to see that struggle in the video we are about to show. The police chief is saying that a veteran officer accidentally discharged her gun instead of her taser. It was an accident, a mistake, they say, a horrific one that resulted in this young man dying. I want to warn you, the video is graphic. You heard there, taser, 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 and then holy, I just shot him. While Minnesota's professional hockey, basketball, and baseball teams have canceled tonight's games in light of the shooting, President Biden tonight also calling for peace and calm after what we saw last night.
There is absolutely no justification, none, for looting, no justification for violence.
The deadly shooting in Minnesota, one of several major police-involved incidents coming to light in the past 50 hours here in Virginia. We've got newly released body cam video. You'll see it this hour. It shows police pointing a gun at a black Latino Army officer. The man was then pepper sprayed, pushed to the ground because officers say they thought he was missing a license plate on his new SUV. And then in Georgia overnight, three officers were shot during a car chase. According to police, a passenger pulled out a rifle, shot at a patrol car. Now, the officer survived, but one of the suspects in the car is dead. We have a lot to cover tonight. I want to start with Shimon Procupes, who is out front live in Minneapolis tonight, where the vigil is being held for Mr. Wright. So, Shimon, what is the latest you're learning about this case?
Yeah, and Erin, that video that you've been talking about, the police chief here saying that it was important to release that quickly. It's really unprecedented to see a police chief release this video, this kind of video, so quickly. The chief here saying that it was important to do so that the community here could see exactly what happened. And a warning to our viewers, Erin, that the video they're about to see is disturbing. less than 10 miles from where former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin is on trial for the death of George Floyd.
Holy shit! I just shot him.
20-year-old Dante Wright killed during a traffic stop with Brooklyn Center police officers, a shooting the police chief called an accidental discharge. Police body cam footage released Monday shows the deadly Sunday afternoon altercation. Police in Brooklyn Center, just outside of Minneapolis, pull Wright over for an expired tag and then try to take him into custody for an outstanding warrant on a gross misdemeanor. The police chief released the video today.
I felt the community needed to know what happened. They needed to see it. I needed to be transparent, and I wanted to be forthright.
After being shot, Wright drove away before hitting another vehicle just blocks away, authorities said. Police and medical personnel attempted life-saving measures following the crash, but Wright died at the scene. The traffic stop leading to yet another fatal police shooting of a black man.
There was an expired registration on the vehicle. When he walked up to the car, he discovered that there was a hanging item from the rearview mirror.
Wright's mother was on the phone with him when he was stopped, and she told CNN affiliates that he said he was pulled over because he had air fresheners hanging from his rearview mirror.
A minute later, I called and his girlfriend answered, which was the passenger in the car, and said that he'd been shot.
Without identifying the officer who shot Wright, the police chief says the officer is a senior veteran in the department who fired her weapon accidentally.
It is my belief that the officer had the intention to deploy their taser, but instead shot Mr. Wright with a single bullet. This appears to me, from what I viewed and the officer's reaction in distress immediately after, that this was an accidental discharge that resulted in the tragic death of Mr. Wright.
Hours after the shooting, hundreds of protesters took to the streets. They were followed by looters and vandals who the police chief called out during a contentious press conference.
Just so everybody's clear, I was front and center at the protest, at the riot. We did not.
There was no riot.
There was. So I was, we were being, the officers that were putting themselves in harm's way were being pelted with frozen cans of pop. They were being pelted with concrete blocks. And yes, we had our helmets on and we had other protective gear, but an officer was injured, hit in the head with a brick.
And tonight, a 7 p.m. curfew has been ordered in three counties, which include the cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Brooklyn Center, to try to contain the unrest. Minnesota's governor addressing the state under all too familiar grim circumstances.
Those that are angry, heartbroken, sad, fed up, tired, all of the things that they have every reason to feel. But we also know, and we saw it again last night, those that would try and take advantage of this to create chaos or damage will not be tolerated.
And Aaron, as you can see behind me, the hundreds of people who have gathered here, this is where this all took place, where all this happened, where Mr. Wright was killed. As the community here is gathering, the medical examiner just releasing their findings, saying that Mr. Wright died from one gunshot wound to the chest and ruled his death a homicide. Aaron?
All right. Thank you very much, Shimon. And that ruling of a homicide just literally happening as Shimon's report was airing. I want to go now to Ellie Honig, our legal analyst, and Isaiah McKinnon, the former police chief in Detroit. So, Chief, let me ask you, you've seen the video, you've heard it, it's distressing. You know, you hear the officer yelling, taser, taser, taser. Then when she fires, she says, oh, you know, you hear the expletive, and it was a single shot. The police chief says they put this out very quickly because they wanted people to understand that they believe that this was a horrible accident. What's your reaction after seeing and hearing this? Do you think that's the case?
You know, Aaron, I've seen so many of these kinds of incidents of people being killed, in particular people of color, and each time there's some kind of an excuse. You know, officers are trained from the time that they're in the academy to the time that they leave, that this is what you do with your weapon. If you pull your weapon out, you intend to shoot someone. Now, we don't know if, in fact, this officer did pull the wrong weapon out. The thing is that they teach you to put the weapon, the taser, on one side and on your weaker side, and your dominant hand will have your gun. You know, we can't second guess what this officer was doing, but my question is, what was the crime that had been committed by this young man? I mean, is it something that someone should lose their life for? And that, to me, is most important here. I mean, we have so many young people and older people who have lost their lives, in particular people of color, who've lost their lives by people who they become judge and jury. I mean, the Supreme Court makes those kinds of decisions, not a police officer. And so, you know, if we look at the crime, I think they said it was a misdemeanor. I mean, you don't get killed for a misdemeanor. And so they had his ID. They knew who he was. And so if he escapes, you know, he's escaping with a misdemeanor. I mean, is that worth losing someone's life over?
Let me just ask you a follow, because it is, I hear everything you're saying. They're saying that then they entered his name. They saw there was an outstanding warrant for his arrest. So that's why this happened. And we all watched it, right? He's standing there very calmly for quite several, I mean, it feels like minutes. Yes. Obviously, we're talking seconds here. But then right when the scuffle begins, right, she starts yelling taser and the shot happens. But does that context change anything to you in terms of what may have been just a really bad error?
Not at all. You had multiple officers that I saw in that video who were on the scene. None of the other officers pulled their weapons that I saw. And again, I go back to, is it worth it to potentially take someone's life over whatever the crime? And I think they said it was a misdemeanor, a high misdemeanor, over those kinds of situations. It doesn't, to me, make any sense.
So Ellie, then what happens here? I mean, Ben Crump, right, who represents the Floyd family, was in the Trayvon Martin case, civil rights attorney, is also now representing Mr. Wright's family. So where does this go from here? There was obviously a settlement from the city of Minneapolis for the Floyd family, $27 million. There's now, of course, this trial, right, the criminal trial for murder for Officer Derek Chauvin. What do you think may happen in this case?
So three things to watch, Aaron. First of all, there could be a civil lawsuit. The family could sue the police department, just like you mentioned we've seen with other police-involved shootings, including George Floyd. There could be, there likely will be an administrative review where the city, the police department, figures out what happens and decides whether this officer needs to be suspended or fired. And finally, there should be, and I believe there will be, a criminal investigation here because there could be liability, even if this was accidental, as the police chief said. And I found it a little strange that he was saying it's accidental, but he was also saying, I'm not going to comment on any other facts, but he concluded it's accidental. But if it was negligent, that could still be manslaughter. That's actually one of the charges right now against Derek Chauvin. So they need to investigate that fully as well.
Really significant to lay all that out. All right, Chief McKinnon, Ellie, please stay with me, because obviously, you know, we're talking about this happening across the country, but in Minneapolis specifically, these protests are coming as Derek Chauvin's defense and the death of George Floyd prepares to start presenting its case tomorrow. Now, what happened today is that the judge rejected a request to fully sequester all jurors. Chauvin's attorney had expressed concerns that the jury could be influenced by the potential for unrest while they were coming to a verdict.
But the problem is that the emotional response that that case creates sets the stage for a jury to say, I'm not going to vote not guilty because I'm concerned about the outcome.
George Floyd's brother taking the stand today, giving personal and emotional testimony about what he meant to his family.
As my mother, she's no longer with us right now, but that's my oldest brother, George. I miss both of them. They are. I was married in May 24th. I got married. And my brother was killed May 25th. And my mom died on May 30th. So it's like a bittersweet month, because I'm supposed to be happy when that month comes.
Prosecutors also calling two expert witnesses who refuted the two main points of Chauvin's defense.
I can state with a high degree of medical certainty that George Floyd did not die from a primary cardiac event, and he did not die from a drug overdose.
No reasonable officer would have believed that that was an appropriate, acceptable, or reasonable use of force.
Omar Jimenez is out front live from Minneapolis. So, Omar, you know, how did the jury respond to today's testimony, especially that incredibly emotional testimony from Filonis?
Well, for starters, when Philonis Floyd, George Floyd's brother, took the stand, what this was really doing was injecting a bit of humanity into what has been a really technical streak of testimony, especially as of late when you look at the law enforcement officers and, of course, the medical testimony we've seen play out over the last few days of this. So when he took the stand, jurors were smiling. They were taking notes. They were they were paying attention very closely, I should say. They were just reacting like a normal human would. And I want you to take a listen to some of what Philonis Floyd wants the jurors to know about who George was.
He was a big mama's boy. I cry a lot, but George, he loved his mom. He will always just be up under her. And you know, every mother loves all of her kids, but it was so unique how they were with each other. He was so much of a leader to us in the household. He would always make sure that we had our clothes for school. He made sure that we all were gonna be to school on time. And like I told you, George couldn't cook, but he'll make sure you have a snack or something to get in the morning.
And right before that, accounts from inside the courtroom got the sense that Philonis felt at ease before making that testimony. And it's almost a reminder that they've been going through this for almost a year, and they've had to process the loss of a loved family member on a national and international scale. So testifying in this trial and talking about what he loved about George seemed easy in some senses. Now we look ahead, though, to see how we are going to prepare for a potential verdict in this. And we know that closing arguments are now scheduled for this coming Monday. At that point, the jury will be sequestered, and then we'll await a verdict.
All right, Omar, thank you very much. And I want to go back to Ellie Honig and the former Detroit Police Chief, Isaiah McKinnon. So, Ellie, you know, you heard what Omar's reporting, right, that the jury, Omar said, was actually taking notes, was riveted today by the testimony from George Floyd's younger brother, Philonis. He is one of the last people the jury is going to hear from before the defense is expected to start its case. So what do you make of that decision, that this was, in a sense, the kind of closing, the final impression that they wanted to leave in jurors' minds?
Yeah, Aaron, in any murder prosecution, one of the challenges prosecutors face is reminding the jury that the victim was more than a victim. He was once a living, breathing, vital human being. And I think Philonis Floyd gave really compelling, moving firsthand testimony today about his big brother and the details, small and large, the small details, the games they used to play together, the foods he tried to cook, and the big details, how he was around his family. That's the kind of thing that I think is really going to hit hard with the jury, that they're going to remember it when they're in the jury box. And it's worth noting, by the way, this is actually an unusual law in the state of Minnesota that allows this kind of testimony. In a lot of jurisdictions, including the federal courts, you cannot call a witness as a prosecutor simply to testify about the character of the victim. However, Minnesota does allow it, and I think the prosecutors made a really effective use of that today.
That's really interesting. I wasn't aware of that, that you could only do that in some places. I think it's really important just to think about that and the reasons. But Chief, let me ask you about what else we heard, right? Because, you know, Omar said that what we heard from Philonis was in contrast to so much of the technical testimony that we've had, much of it damning for the defense. But, you know, it was very technical and detailed, right? And everybody was saying something consistent, but then slightly different here or there. You really had to pay attention. And today, they had a cardiologist who did say very clearly Floyd's death was absolutely preventable. So then the defense again tried to come in and twist that on cross-examination. Let me play it for you, Chief.
If Mr. Floyd had simply gotten in the back seat of the squad car, do you think that he would have survived?
Checking, Your Honor. It's not calling for medical testimony.
You ain't given if you have a medical opinion as to that.
Overruled to that extent.
So, had he not been restrained in the way in which he was, I think he would have survived that day.
So, in other words, if he had gotten in the squad car, he'd be alive.
I think my answer remains the same.
So, Chief, they're clearly going at the argument of if he had just complied, none of this would have happened to him. What do you make of that?
Well, they're trying to put George Floyd on trial. And so the way I would look at this is this. You know, if he was a reasonable officer, he would not have done the things that he did, number one. And number two, as you put George Floyd, they're putting George Floyd on trial. it's unfortunate that we can't look at Chauvin's record and the number of complaints that were against him. And so, you know, if we look at it in its entirety, we cannot put George Floyd on trial and say that he was this bad person because he did not get into the car. Well, there was four guys there putting him in the car. And number two, if, in fact, George Floyd hadn't driven to that location, that wouldn't have happened. I mean, there are a lot of what ifs.
Right.
And so as they try and put George Floyd on trial to demean his character, you know, we look at this in terms of the number of things that happened with him that caused his death.
All right. Chief McKinnon, Ellie, thank you both.
Thank
and
you.
Next, a police officer fired after being accused of pointing his gun and then pepper spraying a black Latino Army officer. Virginia's attorney general demanding answers tonight, and he's my guest. Plus, breaking news, a school shooting today in Knoxville, Tennessee, and we are live there with the latest. And CNN speaks to Florida Senator Rick Scott about Matt Gaetz and the horrible allegations he's facing. Does he think the Florida congressman should resign?
Aaron Burnett Out Front, brought to you by CFP Professionals. Feel confident in your financial plan. Visit letsmakeaplan.org.
Tonight, we're learning that a police officer in Virginia has been fired following an internal investigation. And now a black and Latino U.S. Army officer has filed a lawsuit against the fired officer and another member of the Windsor, Virginia Police Department. As newly released footage shows officers pointing guns at him and pepper spraying him. This is during a December traffic stop. It is just, though, coming to light. So I want to show it to you. This is the new video. And, of course, I do want to warn you that some of this is difficult to watch. Let's go to Natasha Jen with the full report.
You're being detained for obstruction of justice.
This Windsor, Virginia police officer, Joe Gutierrez, was fired after an internal investigation into this traffic stop determined department policy was not followed.
Get out of the car now.
The town of Windsor said the other officer, Daniel Crocker,
work with us and we'll talk to you. Get out the car.
Is still employed. The driver, Army Lieutenant Karin Nazario, is now suing the two officers in federal court on the grounds that the officers denied him his constitutional rights. According to the lawsuit, on the evening of December 5th, Nazario saw lights and sirens but didn't know why he was being pulled over. He indicated with a blinker that he was going to pull over but didn't stop for another minute and 40 seconds because he says he was looking for a well-lit area. By the time he stopped at a gas station, officers Crocker and Gutierrez had their guns drawn.
Driver, roll the window down. Put your hands out the window. Turn the vehicle off. Put your hands out the window.
Nazario began recording from his own cell phone and put his hands out the window as ordered.
What's going on?
How many occupants are in your vehicle?
It's only myself. Why are your weapons drawn? What's going on?
Turns out, Crocker said he had not seen the temporary license plate taped to the back window of Nazario's brand new Chevrolet Tahoe. And seeing tinted windows and a driver not stopping right away, Crocker decided it was a high-risk traffic stop.
What's going on?
What's going on? You're fixing to ride the lightning, son.
Body camera footage shows Officer Joe Gutierrez, gun drawn, unfastening the Velcro around what may be his taser at this time. The lawsuit says Nazario thought ride the lightning meant he could be killed.
I'm honestly afraid to get out. Can I?
Yeah, you should be. Get out.
Get your hands off me.
Back up,
I didn't do anything. Don't do that.
Sir, get out of the car
now. Don't
do
that.
Hey, it's not a problem. Back up, Daniel.
After 2 to 3 minutes of shouted commands, Gutierrez got out the pepper spray. Officer Crocker tried to open the driver's door.
I'm actively serving this country, and this is how you're going to treat me?
In Crocker's report, he wrote, quote, when I attempted to unlock and open the driver's door, the driver assaulted myself by striking my hand away and pulled away from Officer Gutierrez's grip. But in his own body camera footage, Nazario is not seen striking anyone. Crocker's report also says that at this point, Gutierrez, quote, gave several more commands to comply with orders or he would be sprayed with his OC spray. But no such warnings could be heard.
Hold on.
Gutierrez sprayed Nazario, still without either officer having told Nazario exactly what he was being pulled over for.
That's f***ed up. That's f***ed up. I don't even want to reach for my seatbelt. Can you?
Take your seatbelt off and get out of the car. You made this way more difficult than it had to be.
I'm reaching for my seatbelt.
Fine.
Is your commanding officer available?
Once out of the car, Nazario was handcuffed.
Can you please talk to me about what's going on? Why am I being treated like this? Why?
You're not cooperating. Get on the ground.
You know this is f***ed up. Sir, like, f***ed
Lay flat.
This is up. I can't believe it being treated like this. And I'm
hey,
down.
Lay down.
Nazario later explained why he didn't immediately pull over.
I was pulling over to a well-lit area for my safety and yours. I have respect for law enforcement.
No, you don't.
And the officer still pressed him on why he didn't comply with getting out of the car.
I've never looked out the window and saw a gun blazing immediately.
But when we follow you that long, look at the climate this day and against everybody, against us, against y'all. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not out to hurt you, and I know you don't want to hurt me. That's not what it's about. What it's about is making sure that everybody goes home at the end of the day.
Gutierrez's behavior changed drastically in the end.
I just talked about chief of police.
Telling Nazario he's giving him the option to let this all go.
There's no need getting this on your record. I don't want your record. However, it's entirely up to you. If you want to fight it and argue, I mean, and I don't mean that disrespectfully, okay? I mean, you have that right as a citizen. If that's what you want, we'll charge you. It doesn't change my life one way or the way.
Aaron, CNN has not yet been able to reach either officer in this case, and it's not clear right now if they have legal representation. But in that last conversation we watched, Officer Joe Gutierrez seemed to be trying to make it easier for Nazario, presumably out of concern for the young Army lieutenant's career. But tonight, it's Gutierrez who no longer works for Windsor Police, and Nazario is getting praise. U.S. Army Sergeant Major Michael Grinston said today that he's proud of Nazario and that Nazario, quote, represented himself and our Army well through his calm and professional response to the situation. Aaron.
Natasha, thank you very much. I want to go straight now to the Attorney General of Virginia, Democrat Mark Herring, and I appreciate your time, Attorney General. So I know you've demanded personnel records, other information from the Windsor Police in light of this incident. You know, obviously, because of a lawsuit, we're just finding out about all of this now, seeing this video, finding out about the story. As I said, it had happened over the winter holidays. So you're asking for more information under your authority to probe law enforcement agencies over policing practices. Are you preparing to investigate this incident yourself?
Well, first, let me say the officer's conduct that we saw in the videos it was appalling, it was dangerous, and it's unacceptable. And people of color continue to experience brutality and being pepper sprayed, even killed at the hands of law enforcement, and it's got to stop. There are a few things that are going on. First, there is a state police investigation of the incident underway now. We've seen that it's really important when there are officer-involved shootings or something like this, that it's important that there is an independent, unaffiliated agency to fully investigate and to make sure that there is accountability and to maintain the public trust. So that's underway. One of the things that I'm looking into is whether there might have been a pattern of misconduct, of police misconduct, either by these officers specifically or more broadly within the department. Because if so, then we've got more work to do to make sure that this never happens there again.
So let me just ask you about, you know, I know you know this very well, but what our viewers just saw in Natasha's report is that, you know, the officer was you know, said that the lieutenant had tried to slap his hand away. We don't see that occur, right? So claims it happened. We do not see it at the moment he said it occurred. It is not there on camera. And then the officer who has not been terminated, right, there was a pair, obviously, filed a report with apparent discrepancies from what was seen in the body camera as well, right? So and that this included, you know, whether Lieutenant Nazario assaulted the officers and of course, this incident with the pepper spray and whether he was appropriately warned before that happened and that he slapped the officer's hand away, which, again, we don't see it happen on the video. So what do you make of this? What they said happened is not there on camera.
Well, what I saw in the video, like nothing that I saw in the video would have justified the actions that the officers took.
Yeah.
It was Lieutenant Nazario who was the calm one, who was the responsible one. And so under no reasonable use of force policies that I could see would any of this conduct be permissible. And so that's why the investigation is important. But it's also important to find out if is this an isolated incident or have there been reports in the past of unconstitutional policing or brutality or complaints about it from these officers, about these officers or about the department? Because if so, then we've got more work to do in order to put a stop to it, to root it out, and to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Attorney General,
This is happening way too much.
Yeah. Well, this video is really is just awful to watch. All right, Attorney General Herring, I appreciate your time and I thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, next breaking news. Multiple people shot at a high school in Knoxville, Tennessee, including a police officer. Details are still coming in, so we're going to go there live, give you the latest that we know. Plus, a senior Republican senator asks who's in charge at the White House. Why ask such a question? Well, he says President Biden's tweets are too limited and conventional. Breaking news, investigators on the scene of a deadly shooting at a high school in Knoxville, Tennessee. One person dead, a police officer injured after responding to reports of an armed man at the school. Nick Valencia is out front. And Nick, we're awaiting a press conference from investigators. I know this is coming in just a few moments, but what do you know right now?
You know, Aaron, it's an unfortunate reality that people watching this will see this as a sign of America getting back to normal. Another school shooting here this year, and this time it happened in the Knoxville area at East Austin Magnet High School, with police saying they responded to reports of a male subject who was armed on campus. There was initially reports of multiple people who were shot. That since has been clarified to one person being killed. The suspect, we believe, has been taken into custody. One person was detained. A police officer with the Knoxville Police Department did get shot as well during that exchange and has been taken to the hospital. He's expected to survive non-life-threatening injuries. It was about 2 hours after the incident was first reported, around 3:15, that the superintendent with Knox County released a statement telling parents and guardians that they could go back to the building. It was secure. No doubt a tearful reunion there. We understand also that the ATF and TBI is responding, and we're actually waiting, as you mentioned, for that press conference from TBI to update us here later on tonight at about 8 p.m. Governor Bill Lee in Tennessee has called this a very tragic situation. In fact, it was just in January that students went back in person to in-person learning. And just one quick note here, Aaron, WATE, a local affiliate, is reporting that this is the fifth shooting related to the Austin East Magnet High School since the start of the year. Just tragic. Aaron.
All right. Thank you very much. Of course, if we learn more in these next few minutes of that presser, we'll let you know. I want to turn now, though, to Georgia's controversial new election law and the fallout there. Will Smith's emancipation, which was a drama about slavery, now leaving the state about 2 months before it was scheduled to begin production. Now, this is in protest to the voting law, and it's the first major movie production to do so, to pull out of the state. In a statement, Will Smith and the director of the film saying in part, quote, "We cannot in good conscience provide economic support to a government that enacts regressive voting laws that are designed to restrict voter access." Out front now, the Democratic senator from Georgia, John Ossoff. And Senator, I appreciate your time. So, you know, since this bill passed, there's been a lot of calls for companies, productions to move out of Georgia over this law. The film production industry is obviously significant in Georgia. There's a lot of tax breaks. You guys have a lot of film production. There have been other critics of the law, though. Stacey Abrams, Tyler Perry, his studios are based in Atlanta. They've cautioned boycotts aren't the way to go. They could hurt local residents. What do you think? Do you support this move by Will Smith, or do you think that although you may agree with the motive, it may be misguided?
Thanks for having me, Aaron. And no, I don't support any boycott of the state of Georgia. In fact, the economic growth that's been so extraordinary in the last 20 years is a big part of what's driven political progress. Georgia welcomes jobs and investment, and I don't think that moves to boycott the state are constructive. But it's also a fact that bad public policy is bad for business, that legislation that politicizes election administration and restricts access to the ballot for black voters and Democratic-leaning voters is driving business away from our state. And this should be a very clear signal to our Republican state legislature that they're playing with fire when they abuse their authority to try to rig the rules of election administration to gain a partisan edge. And it's why we need to repeal this restrictive voting law that they passed.
So this comes as Republicans who led the charge to overturn Biden's election are raking in the cash, right? Senator Josh Hawley was the first senator to announce he challenged the results of the election. You know, we all remember his fist pumping outside the Capitol there, of course, Senator. He's raised more than $3 million just in the first quarter of this year, according to a source. It was $43,000 of the last election cycle, right? So he is raking money in over this. Marjorie Taylor Greene, obviously from your state, also voted to overturn the election, has taken in more than $3 million. I mean, these numbers are pretty incredible. And money talks. I mean, what is it telling you, do you think?
Well, look, I guess there is a small market of hardcore political activists who support some of those extremist political tactics. But the bottom line is that the overwhelming majority of Americans just want good, decent government. We're horrified by the events of January 6th and the threat that it posed to the constitutional transfer of power, and applaud the Biden administration's massive investment in COVID relief, economic recovery, and defeating COVID-19. So for all of the noise, all of the sound and the fury of partisan politics, the most important thing I want folks to recognize is that we're making huge progress against this virus. It's because Georgia voters sent two Democrats to the United States Senate in January that we were able to pass that stimulus bill.
That's
and
true.
I want to take this opportunity as well to encourage everybody to go and get this COVID-19 vaccine. I've been vaccinated. My wife, Alicia, who's a doctor, has been vaccinated. It's the most important thing we can do as citizens to take it to this virus and put this pandemic behind us.
So one of your fellow senators, John Cornyn, who is the former number two Republican senator, today, you know, mentioned, you're talking about President Biden, the stimulus bill. He questioned whether Biden is actually leading the country. He tweeted, the president is not doing cable news interviews. Tweets from his account are limited, and when they come, unimaginably conventional. The public comments are largely scripted. Biden has opted for fewer sit-down interviews, invites the question, is he really in charge? Well, Senator, you've worked closely with him thus far. What do you say to Senator Cornyn?
Well, first of all, let me say I'm building a strong working relationship with my colleague, Senator Cornyn. We've sat down on a number of occasions, and I think we're going to try to work together on supply chain integrity, environmental destruction, ethics, labor abuses, and supply chains for products that enter the United States market. I'd be curious whether he or his staff wrote that tweet. Twitter is a dangerous tool in politics. But putting all that aside, the American people don't want government to look like pro wrestling. This is not about entertainment. This is about making good public policy without drama. That's how President Biden's conducting himself. He's getting the job done. And it's been a pleasure working with him to get the job done, like we did this last week and a half, helping to broker a settlement between two industrial giants to save an electric vehicle battery plant in Georgia.
So let me ask you about that, because you had the president's support to settle this dispute. It was a trade dispute between two big companies, LG and SK, two Korean companies. But you saved 2,600 jobs at that electric car battery plant in Georgia, as you mentioned. So those are the kinds of jobs that are at the core of President Biden's $2 trillion infrastructure plan. You know, I know he had a bipartisan lunch for lawmakers today to try to sell it. What did you learn from getting this deal done that could help Biden get Republicans on board with these stratospheric price tags for infrastructure?
Well, let me say, first of all, it was a pleasure working with the president and his team, and in particular, U.S. Trade Representative Ambassador Tai, to get this deal done, save these 2,600 jobs in Georgia, ensure that we will have a diversified supply of electric vehicle batteries in the United States. Humanity faces a mighty task right now. We have to adapt to climate change, determine how we're going to keep growing our societies economically without destroying our planet. Electric vehicles are a core part of that transition to clean energy. And the president's proposal for this infrastructure bill includes huge investments in electric vehicle research and development, battery technology, and charging stations. I got involved in this case to save 2,600 skilled jobs in Georgia, billions of dollars of investment in Georgia, so that Georgia can be one of the bases, not just nationally, but globally, for the production of technology that will save our planet and employ our people for decades to come.
All right. Well, Senator Ossoff, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And next, protests growing tonight after police shot and killed Duante Reade right in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota. A state of emergency in effect, and we're going to go back live as we are approaching that curfew in just a few moments. Plus, Senator Rick Scott speaks to CNN about the allegations facing his Florida colleague, Matt Gaetz. Does he think Gaetz needs to resign or be punished in any way? Tonight, a curfew set to go into effect in just about 10 minutes. It's in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, where protesters are gathering after 20-year-old Dante Wright was shot and killed by a police officer. Shimon Procupes is out front from a vigil that is being held right now. So, Shimon, tell me what you're seeing here at 6:49 your time, 10 minutes before the curfew.
Right, 10 minutes before the curfew. There are no police here. This is where the vigil was taking place. It lasted about 30 minutes or so, and then the family and the community broke up, and they told people to go home, that there was a curfew. But as you can see behind me, there are still people here. We saw dozens of them. There was about a couple of hundred here, but many of them did leave. A large group of people did leave this area. We don't know where they walked to, but some of these people that are still here, you can see behind me, they're really, at this point, it does not appear, Aaron, that they intend to leave. Obviously, the big question, as we approach the curfew hour, what are the police going to do? Is there going to be a strict enforcement of this curfew, or is the police going to allow some leniency here? So we'll see. We have a long night ahead of us, and we'll see what happens, Aaron.
All right. Thank you very much, Shimon, as we watch that. Also new tonight, a top Republican senator stopping short of calling for Congressman Matt Gaetz to resign amid a growing number of allegations, including sex trafficking. Here's Senator Rick Scott from Gaetz's home state of Florida with our own Manu Raju.
Matt Gaetz, should he resign from Congress?
Well, the allegation is pretty serious, so I think there should be a thorough investigation.
Mm-hmm. I mean, are you concerned about what you're seeing about this?
Well, on stuff like that, I think there ought to be a real thorough investigation.
Do you think he should lose his committee assignments?
Well, that's a decision for the House.
This as Gaetz was also denied a meeting with former President Trump at Mar-a-Lago. So Manu is now out front. So Manu, Senator Scott, far from the only Republican to call the allegations serious. I mean, it's just pretty clear he doesn't want anything to do with Matt Gaetz from the way he's talking there. But he stopped short of saying Gaetz should resign or be removed from any assignments. What did you take away from this?
Yeah, that's consistent with the Republican approach so far, which is not to say anything, not to rush to Matt Gaetz's defense, but when asked about it, to say that these are very serious allegations. In fact, indeed, they are sex trafficking allegations. Of course, he has denied that, denying having a relationship with a 17-year-old girl. But nevertheless, the Republicans don't want to defend Matt Gaetz, but they are also not calling on him to resign. Rick Scott there making clear that he believes there should be an investigation, and then he will decide what to do next. The question, too, will be what will House Republican leaders do as well? Kevin McCarthy, the top Republican in the House, has not said whether or not that there should be any punishment on Matt Gaetz, or not said whether he should resign. Instead, said that he would have a conversation on Gaetz over the allegations, which he also calls serious. Same with Liz Cheney, the number three Republican, who has been targeted by Matt Gaetz, was not called on him to resign. The only one who has, though, Aaron, is Adam Kinzinger, who's been a sharp critic of the Trump wing of the Republican Party, critic of Matt Gaetz. But other than that, Republicans not defending him, but also not pushing, not saying that he should step aside.
So this comes as the House is scheduled to return to Capitol Hill tomorrow. Do you have any indication of whether or not Gaetz will return?
That's still an open question. Under the rules of the House, members can vote what's called by proxy and essentially designate some member to vote on his or her behalf at their direction as well. And Matt Gaetz has an active proxy letter. That means that he can actually designate someone to vote on his behalf. His office has not said whether he will return. But a key distinction here, Aaron, is that what is called for under the rules is that you can't travel because of the pandemic. There's nothing suggesting that the pandemic would prevent Matt Gaetz from coming, but he has used that as a reason to skip votes in the past and could potentially do it again.
Yeah. Right. Certainly, yeah, he's shown up all the way through mask-free at event after event. He's not using coronavirus in any legitimate way as an excuse. Thank you very much, Manu. And I want to go next to the heartbreaking decision so many migrant parents along the border are having to make in order to keep their children safe. A special report after the break. Tonight, the White House securing agreements with Mexico, Honduras, and Guatemala to mobilize nearly 20,000 police and military personnel at their borders to stop the flow of migrants into the United States. It comes as border officials encountered more than 170,000 migrants last month, including a record number of unaccompanied children. Rosa Flores is out front.
Some of the more than 100,000 migrants expelled by the Biden administration last month ended up here, at a plaza located in the crime and kidnapping hotspot that is Reynosa, Mexico, living in squalor and with impossible choices.
Si regresamos, nos van a matar.
Idalia Payez says her husband and daughter face certain death if they return to El Salvador, where their family business couldn't cover a $200 a month extortion fee to criminal gangs.
Vamos a ir a trabajar.
She says she just wants to work and provide for her daughter. In Reynosa, she and so many expelled migrants are now surrounded by the same dangers they fled. Like this 31-year-old woman from Honduras who is now in a faith-based shelter, clutching a pink rosary. She says she promised to carry the beads during her journey for protection. We can't show you her face, because late last month, she says she was kidnapped from a street near the dangerous plaza, kept for 3 days, beaten, and raped. Her 9-year-old daughter with special needs was with her, wiping away her mother's tears. She says it was moments of terror. With her faith intact, she says she escaped and with her clothes in tatters crossed into the U.S. again. But says immigration officials dumped her right back into Reynosa. Attorney Jennifer Harbury has been representing migrants like her since 2016.
The problem that was created by President Trump is so enormous that it's not settled yet.
And while President Joe Biden is perceived as more humane than his predecessor, some of his decisions...
We're sending back the vast majority of the families that are coming.
...have Jennifer urging Biden to consider their true impact.
People are being hurt, raped, attacked, and killed in northern Mexico because we have sent them back. That's not humanitarian.
And it leaves many moms like this one from Honduras with a Sophie's choice. With her special needs child in arms, she says she didn't want to separate from her 12 and 16-year-old sons on the banks of the Rio Grande.
Your son said it's best if you separate.
Sí.
They had been expelled to Mexico twice, under the pandemic public health rule, which allows for the swift return of migrants to Mexico, when her oldest son told her he wanted to cross alone with his brother because the Biden administration was allowing unaccompanied children to enter the U.S. She says she felt she was dying as she watched her sons cross the river hand in hand, in tears, and then gesture goodbye. She says she misses her sons, who are now in a shelter in New York. As for Idalia and the migrants who are stuck in this dangerous plaza in Reynosa,
are you scared?
See,
their American dream is still alive, despite having to sleep in shifts to watch each other's backs.
And if you're sitting at home wondering, how is it possible that these mothers make this decision to send their children into the United States alone? You've got to think of it this way. Some of these mothers have been returned into areas like Reynosa, and they're there with their children, but they are surrounded by danger, exposed and vulnerable to kidnapping, extortion, human trafficking. And then they learn that the Biden administration is allowing unaccompanied minors to enter into the U.S. And Aaron, they see that as giving their children a chance at life. Aaron? Rosa, thank you very much. A powerful report. And thanks so much to all of you, as always, for being with me. Anderson starts now.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.